You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for listening. We are checking in on how the UW system is responding to the global pandemic as courses go online, professors get guidance on what to do with their classes, and with the reality of community spread and positive tests surfacing on at least two UW campuses, that's really caused faculty, staff, and students to scramble. Are you a UW system student? How have you been affected? Maybe you're a parent of a university student. Has your son or daughter moved back home? Do you work for the UW? Have you been sent home? Can you work remotely? Your questions, they're all welcome. 800-642-1234. Robert Kramer is Vice President for Administration of the UW System. He's overseeing facilities planning, information technology, human resources, and other services. Robert, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Well, we've learned one employee at UW-Milwaukee this week. There was a UW-Madison Veterinary School employee last week. Do we know of any other UW System employees or students who have tested positive thus far?
Those are the students and employees that I'm aware of. I did see UW La Crosse also announced a household member tested positive yesterday. So this is obviously very fast moving.
Do you know at all how many UW students or system employees have been tested for the virus?
I do not have that information. No, I don't know.
There are health centers for students on system campuses straight across the state. What is the role of health centers right now? Are they closed too?
Health centers are still working to provide support to our students. It's a first point of contact if students have questions or concerns. A lot of what they do is help the students decide whether or not to go to a public health place to be tested or just to take some precautions.
So they're like a triage at this point for students.
Exactly, helping us get information out to our students and others in the community.
So we've seen canceled classes straight across the state, moving to instruction online. What are UW System regional campuses and the large campuses, Madison, Milwaukee, are they all in lockstep right now in their response, or are there different schedules going on at the different campuses?
So the campuses are making different decisions based on the circumstances locally. UW System is trying to facilitate and provide guidance where it's important, but it's really critical that the chancellors and the campus leadership are able to respond to the situation that they are dealing with and seeing locally.
And what are those responses like right now? What are you seeing around the state, in terms of the system?
So it's been a range of responses from different institutions, deciding when to move classes to alternative delivery because different campuses had different spring break start dates, for example. There was kind of a cascading the decision to move classes from in-person after break to moving to alternative delivery, including online. A number of those campuses now are looking at, do they continue to be alternative delivery through the remainder of the semester or not? I know that Madison, Milwaukee, I believe Green Bay and La Crosse and Stout have announced that there'll be alternative delivery for the remainder of the semester, for example.
And when you say alternative delivery, this is specifically online classes only. Is that right?
So it's a range of things that the faculty can do to help our students to ensure that, one, students who are planning to graduate this spring can still graduate, and then, two, other students can continue to make academic progress towards their degrees. Those are two of the really critical things that are informing our activities in the context of the overall goal of protecting the health and safety of students, their families, employees, and communities. So, for example, math courses may be delivered in an online format. Music classes or music activities may take a very different form with respect to using some kind of a collaboration tool like Zoom to have a meeting and the students and the faculty working together through that tool.
Well, I'm thinking like organic chemistry. What about these heavy lab courses? What are they doing?
So the lab courses are challenging, and that's where faculty, department chairs, deans, and students are really working to figure that out. I think we'll see a variety of solutions. It's also critically important that as we continue providing these services to our students, we're working with our accrediting bodies to make sure that the quality of the academic program meets the expectations of those bodies.
What are the accrediting institutions telling you right now? What is their guidance to you as a system?
I think they're recognizing that these are unprecedented times, and they're trying to work with us in our academic programs to identify appropriate solutions. It's been really encouraging and uplifting to see how people have pulled together to recognize this is something we've never seen before, and we have to all work together to find ways to continue to support our students.
We're talking with Rob Kramer, Vice President for Administration of the UW System. We're looking at the system's response in the face of COVID-19. With your questions front and center, are you a UW student or a UW employee? How have you been affected by the closures, by going online for teaching? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Rob, moving classes online is an option where it's feasible and students have internet access. But what about those students and instructors in more rural areas where broadband is lacking?
I think that's an important question. You know, one of the things that we're working on is helping students who don't have access find different ways. So, for example, some of the campuses have communicated to students you can stay in the residence halls if you are not able to access the courses where you live otherwise, or if you have no place to go, you can also stay in the residence halls and the dining is still available.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that. So some students who have no place to go are able to stay in specific dorms on the campuses of system campuses. Is that right?
Yes. We're working very carefully with students to make sure that they have options and being supportive of them.
So in these specific dorms, how are students spaced apart? What is the social distancing like?
So one of the things about having many of the students not in the residence halls right now is just the improvement that creates for social distancing. Each campus is looking at how to, again, communicate and encourage students to maintain social distancing, even if they are in the residence halls. And that's something they have to work on and decide campus by campus.
And what about food for these students who are staying? Where are they getting their food?
Kate, we continue to provide food service, obviously at a very reduced level, because it is important that the students have access to the dining services while they're in the residence halls.
And so are they all going to one single food source, or are there multiple options for the students in terms of trying not to gather more than 10 people in the same space?
So each campus is going to have a number of different options for students to get their food, but we're also very cognizant of the importance of social distancing and trying to work with public health officials to keep students further apart while they're dining.
What will happen to these students and for these students if dining halls do need to close?
We'll make alternative arrangements, for example, food delivery. Rather than having the students come to the dining hall, have easy takeout food that they can pick up or it can be delivered to them.
We're talking with UW System's Vice President for Administration, Rob Kramer, is here taking your calls on the system's response to COVID-19. Are you an international student? How is the UW system shutting down affecting you? Do you have visa concerns? Have your classes moved completely online? How is it going? Be part of this, 800-642-1234. Email your questions to ideas@WPR.org. We'll be back in just a minute with Rob Kramer right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We're looking at the UW System's response to the coronavirus pandemic. UW System schools, they've closed classrooms, sent non-essential staffers home to work, moved courses online, as we've been talking about, for spring semester, if not longer, to deter the spread of this virus. Do you work for the UW system? Can you do your job from home, or are you losing hours and pay? Is your business near a campus? How has the campus closure affected your business? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have UW System Vice President for Administration, Rob Kramer, staying with us. So, Rob, UW System is one of the largest employers in the state, almost 40,000 faculty and staff around Wisconsin. What are the universities telling their employees to do right now?
So I think it's a couple messages we're trying to get across to our employees. First and foremost, obviously, is keeping them safe and taking into consideration how do we help them during these difficult times. Every one of the campuses has been working with its employees to identify those individuals who do need to come to campus still to work to perform their duties, their responsibilities. For many of our other employees, we've been able to arrange where they can work remotely, whether it's telecommuting or doing something else, so that they can continue to perform their functions and support the students and other activities that we have to keep going.
And you head up IT services as well under your big umbrella there. How is information technology holding up?
So far, information technology is holding up remarkably well. I have to say, if this had happened 12 months ago, we'd be in a very different place. But over the last 2 years, we've been moving our learning management system, which supports a lot of the online and other types of delivery, to a cloud-based system. And that is really paying unexpected dividends now because we've been able to scale up very quickly to support the faculty and students.
And so you can work from a secure cloud system, and many employees can actually do this from regardless what UW System campus you're on?
Yes, exactly. They can all access their instructional platform and provide information out to the students.
So for the people, for the employees who can't work from home, is paid leave being offered to those employees who can't work remotely?
Yeah. This past week, we instituted both a new telecommuting policy to make that easier, and then we also provided employees with up to 80 hours of paid leave because of these extraordinary circumstances. They can use that instead of sick leave if they need to for themselves or for family members.
When will you be looking at those policies again? This is a continually changing, very fluid situation. Will those 80 hours be enough at this point? When will you reexamine that?
So I think to re-examine that continually. I know that the Congress has been taking some action. I think I heard that there was legislation passed yesterday already, and we need to look at that and see how that impacts our employees and what we need to do next to support them.
Yesterday, UW-Madison said classes would be moved online for the rest of the semester and graduation ceremonies have been canceled. How do the universities come to make these kinds of decisions? And what are you seeing in the system with graduation?
So commencement ceremonies are a really important part of the end of the academic year for all of us. I had not seen any announcements from our campuses. I know it's something that all of the chancellors are talking about with their campus communities, trying to decide how to proceed as this plays out. That really is going to be a campus-by-campus decision, what to do with respect to commencement and how to celebrate the achievement of these students in these very strange times. The graduation of the students is critical, independent of what type of commencement ceremony there is, and that is something we're really focused on, helping students get to graduation.
We're talking with Rob Kramer, Vice President for Administration of the UW System. He oversees facilities planning, information technology, human resources, other services. Your questions here, 800-642-1234. Have your classes been moved online? Are they up and running? How is it going? How is interaction with your professor? Do you think students should get their money back if in-person classes don't resume? We're at 800-642-1234. Rob, let's look at funding here for a moment for students who can't complete the needed requirements, or they feel they aren't getting their education they've paid for through the delivery mechanisms. What would refunds look like, and what would tuition look like?
So I think it's important to acknowledge that this is not the semester any of us anticipated back in January. And so we're all doing our best to make sure that we do help the students continue to make academic progress. I think the question on the finances is one we're going to be looking at further. We have stood up a finance team to help each of the campuses kind of work through the questions they're getting with respect to refunds and other activities. We don't have answers on that yet, but we are looking at all the options.
Yeah, and certainly with student housing as well, if students aren't living there, if they've moved away from their dorm, I would assume that you're getting questions about, hey, can I get a refund for my housing?
Yes, we are getting those questions. And again, we're trying to look carefully with every campus at the options are.
There's also a lot of research that goes on all over the system campuses. What is happening in those laboratories and in terms of these research projects that often have life attached to them?
So that's a really important topic that has not got as much attention probably publicly as some of the other questions we've talked about. As you know, UW schools are really deeply involved in research projects, both at the undergraduate level, in graduate programs, and through the research institutes we have. Right now, faculty and campuses are working on how to identify and proceed with the different types of research they're doing to ensure that things continue appropriately. It's also been an area where many of the agencies that support the research are taking steps to implement special provisions reflecting the fact that COVID-19 is being so disruptive.
One thing you have to bear in mind that is perhaps a silver lining, you still have electricity. You can keep those lights on, the heats on, you can keep those freezers running so those specimens do stay safe.
Yes, you're right. The infrastructure continues to be up and running very well.
What about student-led groups and activities? How are student groups and organizations banding together and getting through this?
That's one of the remarkable things about how students stay connected today, very different than when I was a student.
Me too.
all of the online ways they're connecting and staying in touch with one another. Personal note, one of my students returned home yesterday, and he has been in touch with his friends and groups at campus ever since getting back. So they're staying connected and supporting one another.
They're staying connected and supporting one another. Are they doing outreach? Are they helping other students? Where are they in their communities right now?
So I'm always very impressed with how students work to support one another. From what I've been hearing, there's a lot of that interaction going on campus. Deans of students, student affairs officers, and others are really working carefully with students also to help provide support for them during this unprecedented period of time. It's important that they have access to those resources, even if it's not face-to-face.
Circling back for a moment to faculty, staff, your workforce, your UW system workforce, do you anticipate layoffs during this crisis?
I think that's a decision we have to get to as we go through the financial analyses. Depending on how long this plays out, I've seen a couple of different scenarios in terms of how long we may have these problems. But we're going to have to look at how do we make sure that the UW system is healthy over the next decade. So we have to look at some difficult choices.
Do the budgets, do the coffers, how much rainy day fund is there to get through something like this?
So that's one of the key questions that the finance team is looking at, and we're chewing through some different scenarios of how this might play out.
How can students' families help support their college students right now? What should they do and say?
I think it's important to talk about how students are feeling and the stressors on us and what questions students have about how will we continue all moving forward together to complete their academic programs, to move forward with their goals and aspirations in this very difficult time. So talking about it, acknowledging that this will be hard, but we will get through it.
Every day presents a new challenge in a very rapidly changing situation. What is your challenge today, Rob? What are you working on?
We're working on some of the questions that you and I talked about, the finances, making sure that campuses have the support that they need as they're making decisions, expecting this will continue moving very rapidly, also starting to look ahead. What does the summer and next fall start looking like?
Are you working remotely?
I have been working remotely. I'm in Madison today.
How's it going?
So far, it's been working very well. The tools that faculty and students have access to, we have access to also.
Rob, thank you for joining us, making the time.
Thank you very much, Kate. Stay well.
You too. Rob Kramer is Vice President for Administration of the UW System, overseeing facilities planning, information technology, human resources, and other services. Coming up, we talk about something many of us are doing or will be soon be getting used to. That's working from home. We find out how to get the most out of the home office. Yikes, if you have one, with Wired Magazine at our side. That's right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a note on our programming this morning. The White House is holding a coronavirus task force briefing this morning with updates on efforts to contain the spread, including steps the Food and Drug Administration is taking in response to the crisis. We will bring you live NPR coverage. It starts at 10 this morning on the Ideas Network and online at WPR.org. Right now, we're talking about working remotely in the face of COVID-19, and literally we are. All WPR producers are working from home. I'm not quite to that point of broadcasting remotely from my house in Madison with a mess of elementary school kids running around. You can imagine that. But the reality is the technology, it exists, and there are some circumstances you just can't control when you work from home. The kids, the cat, the dog, your boss is bound to see and hear all of it. Are you working from home? Have you worked from home in the past, or are you new to it? What have you learned about yourself and your coworkers in this setup? Are you keeping boundaries between home and work? How's that going? Join in 800-642-1234. Brian Barrett is digital director at Wired Magazine. He writes about security and consumer technology. Brian, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, help us understand how working from home, working remotely right now can help stop the spread of illness. What kind of impact can it have?
Sure. See, and I think that's a question a lot of people have is why are we going through this? And you know, I think the answer is it's called social distancing. And the idea is that this disease spreads so quickly and so effectively when you are in close quarters with other people that the best way to stop threat slow, or at least slow down that spread, is to keep your distance as much as you can. And you know, the important thing is you can expect that a lot of people are going to get COVID-19. That's just sort of going to happen. But what you want to do is you want to do what it's called flattening the curve, where people get it in a way that is sort of paced out and slower so that we don't overwhelm the hospital system and people can't get the care they need. So the more you stay home, the more you socially distance, the flatter that curve is going to be, the more people the health system can help.
So if your company isn't requiring you to work from home, but it's offering you the option to do so, you should act on that option.
Yes. And again, like I want to recognize, too, that for a lot of people, it's not an option. Retail employees and other sectors are having a really hard time, gig employees. But if you do have that sort of luxury of working home and your company allows you to do it, you should, both for yourself and for the people in your community who may be more vulnerable to the disease than you are, people who are over 70, people with existing autoimmune conditions.
And if you're able to work from home, how much should you be limiting your movement right now beyond that? Because if you're at home all day, all evening, you're going to want to get out.
No, and I'm going through that right now. You know, it depends on where you are at the moment. And I don't want to speak out of turn here because I'm not an epidemiologist, but there are some places, San Francisco, for example, has an order where you have to shelter in place. So you can only really get out if you're going for food or medicine. Other areas have, you know, recommended limited movement. I think the CDC guidelines say no gatherings larger than 10 or 20 people. So a safe rule of thumb is feel free to walk around your neighborhood. Feel free to you know, walk around your community. Try not to do it, though, in a place where there's a lot of people gathered together, because that's what's going to make this spread.
So, Brian, at one point in your career, you worked remotely for about a decade. What are some of the biggest challenges to being productive at home?
Yeah, and I still do. So yeah, I'm currently wrote. I my coworkers are in San Francisco, New York, and I'm in Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, wow.
So, and we make it work. And, you know, I think the most important thing in terms of staying productive, to the extent that productivity matters in the time of coronavirus, but I think it does because it's something to do that takes your mind off of all the other stuff going on in the world right now. Is setting those boundaries. I think, as you mentioned at the beginning, making sure that you know when your workday has started and when it has ended. Because when you work from home, it's very, very easy for your home to just become this sort of half house, half workplace, sort of amorphous void where you're always doing both about halfway. And that's not a healthy way to go about your day because you're going to feel like you always need to be on your laptop and you're going to feel like you're never quite giving yourself space to read a book or watch a show. Or especially if you have kids at home right now, which is a whole other category of problems, looking after them. So, yeah, I think that the boundary setting is the most important thing. I tell people the thing I miss the most about going to an office, and which they think is invariably think is really weird, is the commute. I think the commute is a wonderful thing. Traffic's terrible, but it's a sort of separate, it's a boundary, right? It's a separate space. You're one place, then another place, and you've got about 10 or 15 minutes or half an hour, whatever it is, to decompress in between. And you won't have that decompression time. So go for a walk or, you know, schedule a show that you like, anything that you can sort of do to unplug for a little bit.
Yeah. So help us make some of those boundaries. What would you suggest?
So I think it starts in the morning. I think the most important thing is to actually get out of bed and actually get showered and dressed like you would for a normal workday. I think that way you sort of really put your mind and body in a mode to say, okay, I'm going to do this. When you do start to work, have a dedicated workspace. It can be anything. You don't have to have a home office. It can be, you know, I work from the kitchen counter most of the day. But knowing that that is sort of where work happens is another thing that helps you say, okay, well, when I'm not there, I don't have to work. I think if you work from your bed all day, not only are you probably more likely to take a nap, you're more likely when you do try to go to sleep, you're going to be thinking of work a little bit. You sort of need to train your brain to say, okay, this is where work happens. And the rest of this house is just going to be my normal house where I do my normal house things.
Yeah, well, that takes some discipline because if I'm working at the kitchen counter, I'm going to say, oh my gosh, the dishwasher needs to be loaded or unloaded. I'll just do that really quick between like this meeting or this thing that I'm doing. And suddenly everything is just intertwined.
Yeah, and it's that intertwining that makes it really tricky because then again, you sort of go halfway on both. I think it's really about treating your workday as though you are at work. And so if there are, you know, it's tempting to say, well, I'm just going to catch up on a couple episodes of The Office, right? Because I'm home, I'll just have it on the background. If you wouldn't do that at work, I wouldn't do that at home because it's going to be, you're not as good at sort of doing that multitasking as you think you are. And you're going to sort of, again, you're going to end up half watching The Office, half doing your work. And again, I know there are bigger concerns and everyone I think really needs to do what they need to do to take care of themselves right now because there are so many external anxieties. But to the extent that, again, you want to sort of focus and make sure that work keeps moving, make sure that you have that dedicated space because, again, it pays off on the other end when you don't want to work anymore. It becomes a lot easier to switch it off.
We're talking with Brian Barrett, digital director at Wired. He's based in Birmingham, Alabama, and commutes with his colleagues in California. Still time for you to ask your questions about working remotely. What do you want to know? What tools work for you that help you connect with your colleagues somewhere else? 800-642-1234. Join in with your tips, your questions. You can email them to ideas@wpr.org. So, Brian, have you found any particular setups or tools or things that are just really helpful to have on hand at home in a remote office?
Yeah, you know, I think a couple of things. People are using tools like Slack and Zoom a lot more, which Zoom is a video conferencing software. Slack is more of a group chat for your office. Those are really helpful. I think the one thing I would recommend if you are using some sort of group chat, it's important not to use it only for work things. It's tempting to sort of say, because, you know, tone is hard to convey. It's hard to sort of feel connected to your coworkers in that way if you're only sort of asking them about the deadline that's coming up, you know, or asking them about the meeting and what time it is. So try to treat that as, especially at a time when we're all looking for more human connection, remember that you can connect with your coworkers as humans over Slack or over Zoom. I think some people in our office have started having a Zoom lunch every Thursday where they sort of all Zoom, because they used to have an office lunch every Thursday. So now every Thursday at the same time they used to have an office lunch, now they do a Zoom lunch. And I think it actually is valuable to sort of have that face-to-face connection, even though it's over screens. Because again, so anything,
I have to see this here. So you got your screen up, you got a bunch of people like popping in with their salad in front of them and just like eating and randomly talking.
Yeah. Which not in the same way. So again, it's not this. I think we also did and I wasn't able to go. We also had a happy hour over Zoom last Friday. I mean, it's a little silly and it sounds silly, but I do think it's important, especially if that is what you're used to. I think, again, it's not just about transferring the work things to your home. It's transferring the other things, the water cooler moments, to whatever extent you can. Try to recreate those somehow, at least for now, because those are important. Those are how, you know, some really good ideas happen, not in that 10:30 staff meeting, but, you know, over lunch or over a beer or over coffee. And obviously you can't replicate all of that, but again, especially at a time when everybody's stressed out, everybody's not sure what's going on, connecting with your coworkers as on a human level really goes a long way. That sounds obvious, but it's hard to do when you're so focused on just getting your own stuff done and not used to maybe communicating only in, you know, group chat form when things can really not be conveyed as easily as you'd want.
Well, let's take a call. Brock is in Seymour this morning. Hi, Brock.
Hi, good morning. I have a question for your guest. I'm wondering, no one in my company is working from home or has been given that option. However, some of us, including myself, would be able to work from home relatively easily. So I'm wondering if there's a way to bring this up to your boss if you're in a similar situation to me.
What would you suggest?
You know, I guess I would point to even, it depends on the size of your office and where you're located, but I think even it might be worth pointing to the CDC guidelines that literally say group gatherings of more than 10 or 20 people, they advise against it. So if you have an office with 10 or 20 people, that's a group gathering. I think the other important thing is if people aren't taking the coronavirus seriously in your office, an important thing to remind them is that it is spreading widely in the United States right now. That's an irrevocable thing. And that you don't know that you are sick. You don't show symptoms until at least 5 days after you have it. So the important thing is to take steps before you know there is a problem. The idea is to prevent the problem rather than to sort of deal with it when it comes up, because by the time it shows up, it's already too late.
Brock, thanks for the call. We're talking with Brian Barrett, Digital Director at Wired. We're looking at the remote office, how to do it well. How do you make sure you're doing a good job of communicating clearly with your coworkers when you work from home? Are you a parent with kids now out of school? How do you manage to balance parenting with working from home? What are the challenges? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Many companies and universities, they've asked their employees to work remotely in response to the uncertainties presented by COVID-19. Close to a quarter of the U.S. workforce already works from home, at least part of the time. But new policies leave many employees and their managers working out of the office, separated from each other for the very first time. So we're doing a check-in here. How's it going? Be honest. Are you able to get stuff done? Do you find you can keep up with all the instant messages and the dings on your phone? Has the stress of the global pandemic kept you up at night or made it harder to focus on your work with a clear head? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We have Wired Magazine's digital director, Brian Barrett, who stays with us. Let's take another call now. Nancy is with us from Wautoma. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I understand you've been telecommuting for more than 30 years.
Yeah, I have. I started out commuting from home, telecommuting before there was telecommuting. And computers have made this a lot easier. I was also a single parent for a lot of that time. Fortunately, when you know you're going to be telecommuting, you can arrange for daycare. This circumstance is way different, and I'm comparing it to when my daughter was home sick. It's really helpful to flex your work time, too. If there's a way, if you're not in meetings or something, do work before the kids get up, do work after they go to bed. It's really grueling on you, but you get a lot more done that way in a lot less time.
Yeah, Nancy, thank you so much. Brian, Nancy sounds like she's saying time shift whenever possible.
That is when you have, when kids are a part of the equation, that is absolutely true. And I have two young children at home now, and it's very different when you are also taking care of kids and trying to work and almost impossible. Time shifting is a great way to do it. My wife and I are both working from home now, which is also a new situation for us. And we're trying to sort of implement a schedule where we sort of switch back and forth between looking after the kids and getting our work done. But it's hard. And I think there is no great easy solution when you have to do both, especially as Nancy said, you know, childcare is not really as widely available, understandably, right now. I think there are some great programs that people have been putting on. There's a children's author named Mo Willems has written The Elephant and Piggy Book and The Pigeon Book.
Don't let the pigeon stay up late.
Exactly. Don't let the pigeon don't let the pigeon get into crowds. But Mo Willems is doing every day at 1 p.m. Eastern time. He's doing a live drawing lesson for kids through the Kennedy Center. And it lasts about a half an hour. That's a small chunk of the day. But there are some other authors who are doing this too. Oliver Jeffers, another children's author. There are a lot of resources from children's authors and artists and illustrators coming together to try to provide some sort of entertainment and stimulating entertainment for kids during the day. But yeah, it is hard. Time shifting is a great way to do it. I think also that is where flexibility on managers being flexible with people who have kids at home and recognizing this is a very hard situation for them. Mm. And giving them that space to flex is really important. I think that's where that comes into play.
Nancy, how have you seen managers come around, your company come around over the decades? Are they more open-minded about how telecommuting works?
Oh, absolutely. I have a sister and brother-in-law who, over the course of time, have both become telecommuters. And they've been able to move around the country because of it. There's a lot more with the technology. Every year, the technology is improving. We didn't have Zoom a couple of years ago. And it's a lot easier to do so because so much of our work is digital now. But the practicalities of working at home can be really difficult. I found that I had to move my desk someplace where I couldn't see a television, someplace where I was not going to be disturbed if my daughter was home. You might not have the option to do that if you're not used to telecommuting. A lot of people use their unused formal dining rooms in a pinch. And also stay away from social networking. If you have like Facebook or something and you know you're going to want to be on it, take it off of your computer or off of your phone and only access that on certain periods of time during the day. But the managers, they're telecommuting, a lot of them too.
Yeah. So really you're saying limit the distractions wherever possible. Now, do you keep a pretty rigid schedule? Do you take regular breaks, or is your day more fluid?
My day is pretty fluid. I try to get up, get showered, get dressed, even if it's only in jeans, at the same time every day. I do take breaks at least like 3 or 4 times a day. Going out and walking and clearing my head is great, and that's a great time to take your kids out. You can walk around your neighborhood and maybe not be within contact of other people. Walk the dog. But I do try to keep regular business hours, because otherwise you could work all day and all night and really not get a whole lot done.
And maybe not be able to show proof of that because people are not seeing you in a specific office space.
That was not as much of an issue because the work that I do is like results based.
Okay.
You know, I would be doing reports and writing things, and that's how I prove that I've done what I've done.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, great insights. Thank you so much for contributing. Brian, another big challenge here is being lonely or sad or antsy or feeling isolated, not being able to leave the house as much. How can you deal with those feelings of isolation?
So that's a very good question. And normally my answer would be, you know, go to coffee shops every few days, but now that's not as much of an option. So I think I agree that normally limiting social media is a great idea. I think, you know, give yourself a little bit of flex for that these days, and take some time to just FaceTime with friends, text with friends. I think these are sort of extraordinary circumstances where we can bend the rules a little bit. And again, those moments with coworkers, the sort of hopping on a Zoom chat with a coworker to talk things through, or hopping on the phone with them when normally you would just, you know, have a Slack with them. Any little moments of human connection now, I think, are going to be really important. And that's not just a work question. I think that's sort of a broader cultural question as we look at sort of widespread social distancing for the next several weeks at least.
Well, it's interesting you say to bring a little more levity personality into the Slack conversation, because managers in the past, or at least to the present, have been saying, you know, only work on that Slack channel. Don't bring anything else there. It is only work related. But you're saying break down a little bit that barrier right now.
I think so. And if there are certain public channels where that are strictly for work, that's fine. But you can also send direct messages to people on Slack. And I think that's a, if you want to keep your sort of more personable messages there, I think that's fine. Or small groups of people that you work with on Slack. I think it's important for them to remember, too, that you are a person. And this is for if you're normally a remote worker, where everyone else is an office, which is not the current situation. But if you are in that situation ever, I think it's easy, if you don't see someone every day, to forget that they are an actual person with thoughts and feelings and a sense of humor. So the more you can bring that out in text, the better. I don't be afraid of exclamation points and italics, just to try to really convey not just your words, but sort of the intent behind them, because that is pretty easy to get lost.
Okay, I want to tap your brain here for a moment, because you're with Wired. And what if you have a slow internet connection? Is there anything you can do at this moment?
So there are some things you can do the best thing you can do is to sort of get a new router, which can be expensive. But I think if you have one of those old routers that looks like a sort of an alien bug.
Yes.
There's a new type of router, relatively new in the last 3 or 4 years or so, called a mesh router, which is where you actually have three smaller little units that you can put around your house to sort of get a better distribution of Wi-Fi around your house. Those are companies like Eero. There's something called Google Wi-Fi. Those are pretty effective for hitting those dead spots in your house that you're used to and getting rid of those. If you don't want to, which is totally fine, even where you put the router can make a difference. Put it somewhere. I think we all tend to put it back in our home office, or like in our office or in our bedroom or somewhere really far away. The more central that router can be, the better positioned it is to sort of get Wi-Fi to your whole house. And then also, I do want to say some of the internet companies are doing a good job of raising speeds in rural communities for free, lifting data caps. So, you know, hopefully we're going to see improvement bit by bit.
Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks for having me.
Brian Barrett is digital director at Wired. He writes about security and consumer technology. Just ahead, two school superintendents, Milwaukee and Green Bay, give us updates on how their districts are dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. What do you want school superintendents to bear in mind as they make decisions about kids and teachers, classrooms? Join in 800-642-1234. You're listening to the Ideas Network.